Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go frickin' nuts. You know, a lot of people actually get offended when they hear the tagline, the lighter side of genocide. I can assure you, there are a hell of a lot more offensive things than making fun of people being exterminated by the government. For example, the government exterminating people. That's more offensive! My very special guest is Janet Phelan from janetphelan.com. Welcome back. And sorry, we'll cut you off from this like epic rant that you're going through. Don't you just love it when you've got these little scumbag pieces of trash cockroaches cornered and got the light shining on them and they're all nervous and stuff and trying to shut you up and you're like, yeah, you better be afraid. Run, you cockroach.
Well, I'll tell you, Vinny, it would have been a lot more productive if the other media that was there in that room actually reported on what happened there. There were other reporters, and they,
You know why they call them media, Janet? Is because it's all about me, media. That's all they care about.
Well, see, but that's the human. That's the human affliction, Vinny. That's what's going to sink us, actually, is our... It's our focus on ourselves, you know, as numero uno and numero only, and everybody else can take a friggin' leap. And that's the perspective that's going to sink us. So I was at the BWC, and I asked these questions of Gerstein, who was really unable to answer them. So at the second U.S. side event, we had another little panel up there. And lo and behold, we had a gentleman named Selwyn Jameson, who was with the FBI Bioterrorism Squad. And I thought, well, I didn't get the answers, any answers from Gerstein, so I'll ask the same questions of Jameson. And, you know, I wanted to know, well, you know, doesn't the language in this Section 817, doesn't that constitute a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention? And Jameson's response was classic. He said, "You must be mistaken. The U.S. does not violate treaties." Now, at that point, I was ready for my follow-up, you know, which had to do with waterboarding and torture. I thought that would be a good place to start. But at that point, I apparently wasn't going to be able to ask any more questions. My mic went off, and, you know, I was just, so I was just sort of funneled into no man's land there. So,
you know, I would have done in that position. If he says the U.S. doesn't violate treaties, I would have just burst it out laughing, like Oh, are you serious? Oh, okay.
Well, listen, Vinny, I'm thinking very seriously. This BWC, this big, important organization, has another meeting coming up in December, and I am seriously thinking about going. I had positioned myself at the last meeting where I would be able to present because I registered as an NGO. But this time, I'd like to make sure there's some media in the room who's actually going to cover what's really going on. So, anyway, if you want to come to Geneva this December, bring your video camera and let's make some waves, huh?
Janet. I can give you advice as an independent media person who's been operating for 6 years and has a huge following and more videos and more coverage than anybody else in this country. Do it yourself. You cannot rely on anybody else. Anybody else. You cannot trust them. Not because they're incompetent, not because they're bought off, not because they're just lazy, but because you have the passion, and they don't. You actually will film, and will get it out there. All you need is a little handy cam. That's how I started, and look where I am today.
Well, you know? I will certainly take that advice very seriously. Thank you, Vinny.
Just a little tripod, and that's fine. I mean, if you want to get some decent equipment, I can recommend some different products and stuff on eBay that you can get if it's at all possible. You know, we've got these little Bluetooth wireless microphones that have a 50-meter range on them. kind of thing, about 150 feet away, and it still gives a crystal clear Bluetooth sound. You can plug it into your any old thing. I mean, yeah, do it yourself, wow, man.
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you, if we could actually get some real media in there, you know, we could actually get some news reports out about what is actually happening on that convention.
Maybe you're confused. Maybe you're confused as to what real media really is.
Well, that's why I asked you, Vinny. You. Okay. So it was actually quite a circus there in Geneva a couple years ago. Hillary Clinton showed up for the first time ever to basically tell us what a wonderful job the U.S. is doing fighting bioterrorism. She actually presented the day after I made my speech, and she, you know, was, I guess, in a sense, trying to refute the points I've made. But my concerns about the United States and bioweapons go quite a bit deeper than changes in legislation and you know, and a top-heavy financial impetus following September 11th to fund these bioweapons labs. My concerns actually go into delivery systems. And these concerns, I think, really focus on three domestic delivery systems, which pretty much dovetail. One is my longstanding concern as to why, and this again began under Richard Nixon and has been carried out throughout the decades, why the U.S. started to quietly and secretly reconfigure the water systems all over the country, creating this double-line water system, which provides a perfect, venue for selective delivery of biological or chemical weapons. And if anybody's, you know, doesn't know about this project, you can Google water as a weapon, and also my article Homeward Bound, which both of which carry blueprints and other sorts of documentation as to this issue. Now, the reason that the reconfiguration of the water system is so important is because it does provide selectivity. And if there's going to be a domestic bioweapons attack, which would probably fall under the guise of a pandemic, right, it would have to be selective. For example, I know Alex Jones has been saying they're going to release airborne Ebola. Well, if they release airborne Ebola, they will kill themselves. So, you know, we have to look at a means to deliver some sort of pandemic type agent that would not infect the perpetrators. So that is why selectivity is an issue. Also, vaccines can also basically be selective in terms of delivery system, because you can have two boxes of vaccines. I mean, it's simple, and you've got a list of people. You know, A-list gets, you know, something, and B-list gets something else. So you've got selectivity possibly there in vaccines.
Whoa. So let's say, for example, you got a list of subversives and a list of willing slaves and dupes, okay? And you got two boxes of vaccines. One has a advanced bioweapon, and the other has saline solution.
See
what I'm getting at here?
It's entirely feasible. Right. There is a potential selective component. And the other issue, which dovetails so beautifully with a possible pandemic, is what we're calling imposter pharmaceuticals. And imposter pharmaceuticals are essentially fall into the same sort of descriptive category as box A and box B of the vaccines that we just discussed. And these imposter pharmaceuticals, and these exist. I mean, unfortunately, I can prove this. Imposter pharmaceuticals, let's say you go to the pharmacy and you want to get your antibiotics or your Viagra or your you know, whatever you generally get from the pharmacy. You plunk down your prescription, and the pharmacist goes into the computer, because everything's computerized now. And if you're flagged, you could get the imposter. And the imposter will cause a heart attack or stroke. This is at play. These exist. So we have three potentials here for selective, basically, delivery of a biological or chemical weapon. And my concerns, I know there's a lot of people who are now stating, you know, martial law is coming and they're going to come get you and so forth. And my perspective...
They can just kill you all when you come and get your next heart medication pill.
That's right. That's right. And really, how did Andrew Breitbart die? You know, I mean, what really, heart attack suddenly? I mean, you know, had he just gone to the pharmacy? I mean, really, how would we know?
So, well, you had Suzanne Posel on the show the other day revealing that some of the new pacemaker designs that have wireless access, so the doctors can check on their status and things like that, you can actually activate them to deliver electric shocks to the heart when the heart's going fine and kill people with them.
Yes, and Barnaby Jack, the hacker, was just on the verge of exposing that at a big hackers meeting. And but he's in his 30s and he just like keeled over dead. And he was working, actually, with medical supply companies to try to make these pacemakers safer so that this wouldn't happen. But she's absolutely right. It can. And so, you know, we lost Barnaby to this, you know, trying to expose this as well. So my concern here is that people who are thinking that, you know, that they're coming to get you, you know, get your guns and hunker down because they're coming... My concern, and I'm not saying that isn't going to happen, but my concern here is that the United States has really invested itself heavily in its public persona. We are the beacon of freedom and democracy throughout the world. And if we start, like, sending, you know, police in to pick people up and shoot them in the streets or something or take them off to FEMA camps, we're going to be, like, basically putting ourselves in the same obvious category as Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin.
Well, if you recall, Adolf Hitler got away with taking everybody to these camps. And my sister actually spoke to Carl and Bridget, who were the parents of her of an exchange student friend of hers, and she asked them about this, and that nobody had any idea at the time. There was a Jewish community down the road from them, and one day they were all gone. They had no idea. And they were just told that they were taken to a places where they could be safe. And that's what will happen in America if they do implement those orders. I mean, it's like they've got backup plans to their backup plans to their backup plans. All right? So if the drugs don't get you, if the electromagnetic radiation doesn't get you, if the pandemics don't get you, then you got your FEMA camps and so on and so forth. If the fake heart attack guns don't get you, you know, so on and so forth. You know, they can get you any way they all please. And I don't think anybody is capable of even working out all of the possible ways that these fracks have figured out how to kill you. You know why? You know why people can't figure out all of the different ways and psychopathic methodologies in order to kill everybody? Because you're not freaking crazy psychopaths. You don't think like they do. And you haven't spent hundreds of billions of dollars coming up with umpteen thousands of different programs to murder your countrymen. That's why you can't figure it out.
Absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
I mean, no wonder I've got to make jokes about this kind of stuff, but frack! You know, here's a joke to actually ease the tension on this one. You know how a lot of U.S. activists, particularly ones that are actually exposing bioweapons like yourself and attacks and releases to release pandemics and things like that, they all seem to be, or at least a lot of them, traveling to South America, you know, countries like Peru. And I was thinking, and you'd all come together, play an instrument, and form a Peruvian pandemic flute band.
Well, that's a wonderful idea. And as soon as Snowden shows up here in the South, I'll see if he wants to play the guitar or the drums, huh? Yeah. Wow. Really. Good idea. So,
in fact, I'm going to send that idea away to my man Roy, who does the great pictures at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Peruvian pandemic flute band. That would be a great picture, isn't it? You know, put it up on the website. All right. Anyway, sorry, Janet. Sorry to interrupt.
No,
something
no.
A little it's, less.
It's, yeah, I think it's actually. Actually, you know, just to sort of do a quick plug for my upcoming book, I have a book coming out soon entitled Exile, and it goes into details about what actually happened that made Mexico look far more inviting to me than the United States. And it wasn't really a case of inviting. It was a case of, like, desperate flight. So,
So was it the drug cartels or the gun bans that make you not be able to defend yourself against the drug cartels that attracted you?
I'm sorry, what? What did you say?
Was it the drug cartels or the gun bans that disable you from being able to protect yourself against the drug cartels that attracted you to Mexico?
You know, I'm not sure I'm smart enough to even answer that. You've got my head spinning here. Rabid police officers in the United States. That's what it was.
They're roid raged up. But at least they're not employed by the drug cartels, paid off to shoot people that expose them.
What's the difference?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this the other day, you know. The United States has the NSA, and in Mexico they've got the NSA. We'll be right back after the break. At thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, Janet Phelan from janetphelan.com is my guest. That's Phelan with a PH, and which is incidentally, she's not that acidic. We'll be right back.
Bonkers.
In my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. My very special guest is Janet Phelan from janetphelan.com, as in, oh, what a feeling. And speaking of which, I was really concerned. I came back from a protest yesterday, and we started bullhorning in the middle of Pukekohe. It's a little town not too far south of Auckland, right, where I live. And within, I think, maybe 30 seconds of starting to bullhorn, the guy from the Sterling Sports Pukekohe, goodness knows what his name is, but he's a douche anyway, comes out and he says, "You don't have permission to do this. It's free speech, sir. This is a public road." He says, "No, it's not." And I go, "Really? Is it a private road? Do you own it?" He's like, "Well, I'm going to call the cops on you." I go, "Call the cops, mate. Freaking scumbag." You know? What is it about people these days? They love their own frickin' enslavement. They hate people who speak the truth. They hate people disrupting their important little businesses just to do, you know, things like, I don't know, maybe expose the fact that you're not going to have any privacy anymore and you're going to be ruthlessly criminally enslaved by a bunch of frickin' scumbags in the parliament that you elected based upon lies and BS and selling out the entire country and everybody's particular freedoms that all of your ancestors frickin' died to secure for you. And you want to call the cops on me? You know what I found very interesting about the cop that came out to me? He was English, you know? And I was just, at the time, talking to him, you know, he's a relatively nice cop. He told us to turn the cameras off. I wasn't going to turn those freaking cameras off, you know? He tell my cameraman, Vince, turn that camera off. And I go, "Don't turn that camera off. You know why? because every single time where you turn the camera off, they start acting like scum. All right? And they start violating your rights. And they use it as an excuse to start manhandling you. Every time. All right? That's why I no longer turn the cameras off when they ask me to. I just go, no, I'm just going to be perfectly respectful and amicable with you, sir. And if you've got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. So let's just have a nice, friendly conversation. And that's precisely what we did. And that's something that I've noticed is the difference between New Zealand-born cops and English-born cops that are here in New Zealand now, is that the English ones will actually talk to you and try to, have a discussion. The New Zealand-born cops, on the other hand, they start being a dick right away, shoving you, ordering you around, bossing you around, like they're little frickin' thug jackboot pieces of trash. You know, boss round protesters, shove them for absolutely no reason. I remember I was at a TPPA protest, a Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is going to basically destroy this entire country's local economy and enslave us to the New World Order. And elderly protester was walking through the police lines. You know, everybody was told to get on the other side of the police line. So she was walking to the other side of the police line, and this big frack off cop, taller than me. Okay, I'm 6'4". I'm pretty massive, and this guy was taller than me. Shoves her viciously through the police line, and she comes right at me. And you know, if I actually hadn't been there for her to crash into, like big chubby and soft as I am, she would have fallen on the ground and maybe even smashed her teeth out. Okay, wow. I hate New Zealand cops. I prefer English cops that are in New Zealand, okay, for this very reason. They're thugs. They're real scum. I don't want to insult all New Zealand cops by this, and I don't want to tar you all with the brush, but you, if you're a good cop and you see this happening and you don't do anything to stop it, you're just as freaking culpable. So that's why I say all New Zealand cops are scum, because you either treat us like trash, or you let us be treated like trash, which means you are the trash. Don't you forget it. Don't you forget who the bad people are. It is not the criminals that you, the alleged criminals that you're bossing around and shoving at protests. It's you. Only you. Wake up. Wake the frack up. Start doing something good for your community instead of oppressing them, acting like an animated uniform and an extension of the state, as David Icke would say. I just had to get that off my chest because it really Fs me off to no end. All right, Janet, I'm sorry. I just went off on a tangent rant.
Well, you're known to do that, Vinny, and it's always a pleasure to be a witness to one of those tangent rants. You know, just to inject my perspective here as to why New Zealand cops would be so particularly nasty, I think there's like a giant sort of Stockholm syndrome going on with police. You know, they basically signed up to be the enforcement arm of a corrupt power broker, which is the state, okay? And they know it. And I want to give a little story as to how I know they know it. I was here in Mexico, and there was a bunch of expats sort of sitting around, and some guy I'd never seen before. And I go, "Hey, you know, you retired?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm retired." He goes, "Retired from the police?" I go, "Really? You retired from the police? When did you retire?" He goes, "Oh, like 2002. I thought, I'm thinking this after 9/11. And I said, "Well, you know, how do you like it down here?" He goes, "Great." He goes, "You, what do you do?" I go, "I'm a reporter." And suddenly his whole aspect changed, and he's kind of, his eyes are darting around, and it lowers his voice. He goes, "You're a reporter." He says, then you know what's going on." I felt so sorry for him. I mean, he left. He exercised his conscience, and rather than become an enforcement arm of evil and abuse, he left the force. But he saw what was going on, and he knew. And he wanted to make sure. He says, "You know what's going on then?" And you know what's going on is they're violating people's rights. You know, they're falsely arresting people. They're setting people up. Just the other day, I got an email from a guardianship reform activist named Marty Pren, who's out in the Midwest, and you know, they tried to set him up on fake drug charges. I mean, I experienced that too. It's one of the reasons, you know, behind my decision to leave my country. I don't use drugs. So, you know, I come home and there's, you know, drugs all over my house and I'm freaking out and the police show up. You know, it's a dangerous scenario. So, you know, so we have police knowingly basically trying to criminalize innocent people, assaulting innocent people. And so, you know, at some point, whatever sort of little tiny mote of a conscience they still have left that hasn't been sort of, you know, processed out of them through their police training, you know, kind of kicks in. And so they become even more abusive because they're basically, they signed on to it. This is their job. This is what they do. And it makes them very angry. And so they take it out on us. Stockholm Syndrome. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of these things that I think people need to really get their head around. If somebody has a uniform, that person loses their mind eventually. And my good friend Grace Hayden, she's a 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand Police, incredible woman, really good at her job. And she said on this show in 2010 that the New Zealand Police are so corrupt, that you will either become corrupt like them or you will leave. And she left. You know, so there's a lesson to you. Any police watching this, I know that the police do watch these videos. In fact, I've called up the cop station and asked them what they thought of them, and they go, hang up the phone on me. Run, you cockroach. I just want to encourage them to leave and turn whistleblower. All right, basically, you know that you've been exposed to training protocols that are against your good conscience, if you got one. Come out. Go public. Start up a YouTube channel. I don't care. Contact me. Slip me some information. I will not reveal who you are or what your name is or anything like that. I don't do that kind of thing. I don't reveal my sources like any good chef. And I'll get the information out for you about what the real training protocols are, about how corrupt the police as an institution truly is in this country and in any other. Okay? I don't want to live in a country where the people who are supposed to keep you safe are indeed the ones who make you most afraid of all. I'm actually really afraid of police, Janet. I'm really afraid of judges too. And I'm really afraid of criminal gangs, which incidentally the police are. You know, and it's for the same reason that I fear judges, police, and gangs, is because they're deceptive. You can't trust anything that they say. And they have no respect for the rule of law. And in the case of just the police and the gangs, they're violent. You know, they have no qualms about using violence against you. I don't like my personal space being violated. I haven't laid a hand on anybody since I was 15 years old when I decided that I didn't want to be a violent person anymore. You know, I was really, really violent up until that age, all the time. And now I can't deal with it at all. You know, that sense of enraged, inflamed sensation you get when somebody messes with you and you know that there's nothing you can do back to them, you know? If a cop smacks you in the face for no absolute reason and you smack him back, instead of what should happen, which is he gets haymakered and gets knocked out and the rest of the other cops laugh at him for being such a douchebag for smacking you in the first place for no reason, all of them will jump on you like a gang, kick your teeth out, gouge an eye out or something like that, and just be absolutely vicious, taser you, mace you, that kind of thing. That's how you know that you're a slave, when you can't defend yourself against somebody who's acting unlawfully. The day that I realize that I'm free will be the day that a cop assaults me and I knock him out
and nothing happens to me. That will be the day that I realize that I'm free finally.
I do want to say that it was very astute of you to include judges in that list, because judges actually are the law. You know, they are there actually to uphold and support the law, but they don't anymore. They are the law. So they are issuing absolutely corrupt, malicious, and illegal decisions. And once again, your ability to redress that has been terribly mitigated in the U.S. I have a lot of articles concerning this on my website. Because it is, you know, legal corruption is one of the issues that I really focus on. I want to say, before we don't have too much time left, I think, and I wanted to say a little bit more about biological weapons, if that's okay. Is that okay? Can we shift gears?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I'm just going to exhale this kind of rage that I'm feeling and then just, okay, go for your life.
Okay. Well, we talked earlier about selectivity and delivery system, you know, box A and box B concerning both medications and vaccines, and also the very sort of diabolical thing that they've done with the water system. But there's also the issue, another issue having to do with selectivity is selectivity in agent, you know, selectivity in the type of bioweapon that they may be choosing to deliver. And pursuant to that, I started looking at the issue having to do with genetic weapons. And a genetic weapon, a weapon that is fashioned against either an individual DNA or a group's DNA, also basically meets the standard for selectivity. For example, if somebody wanted to really mess you up, Vinny, if they fashioned a bioweapon, if they, you know, they have to grab your DNA first, you know, that's easy. You know, let's just take a little hair follicle, or, you know, you're drinking at a party and you sip from a glass. I mean, it's got your DNA on it, then saliva, you know, just grab the DNA, and then they can fashion a genetic specific weapon that would only target Vinnie Eastwood. And at that point, you know, the method of delivery would be, you know, pretty easy. I mean, they can either put it in food, water, air. You know, those are the basic, you know, consumables, air, food, water, right? Now, this sounds like science fiction. However, there are many indicators now that this is at play. And I want to give a couple of examples here. Back in 2009, a book came out that was entitled In the President's Secret Service. And this book detailed that it was written by a Secret Service agent named Ronald Kessler, and it detailed how there's a whole Secret Service unit now that is pledged to protect Barack Obama's DNA. They follow him around. They burn sheets. They vacuum up his hair. They grab the glasses where he's been drinking and, you know, go destroy them because there is grave concern about somebody unfriendly to the president grabbing his DNA. Now, that indicates that the concern that, you know, DNA-specific weapons may be actually launched against the president are actually now current. Also, back in 2010...
Janet, we're coming to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Sure.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love.
Welcome back.
It's because it's when everything is just right.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Oh yeah, baby. Give it to me. Inject me with your poison pandemic flute band. My very special guest.
What a way to go, huh? Yep.
Yeah. Stick your thumb on that plunger, baby. This just got really out of hand. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. Janet Phelan is my guest. And you were really getting into something before we got interrupted by the break. Can please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, continue. We've only got like 10 minutes left.
Right. So I was talking about genetic weapons and how they can now fashion a weapon that can individually destroy Vinnie Eastwood or Janet Palin or anybody else, actually, based on your own DNA. And I was giving some examples as to you know, indicators that this is so. And I'd mentioned that the contingent of the Secret Service agents who are now pledged to protect Barack Obama's DNA, they scurry around like, they kind of remind me of the the Mormon Mafia who took care of Howard Hughes. You know, they kind of scurry around like, you know, burning bed sheets and grabbing little hair follicles, you know, just kind of like the personal attendance to Barack Obama's DNA to make sure that nobody else grabbed it. And the other issue...
I love the word scurry whenever we talk about any kind of henchman of officialdom. It's really apt.
Yeah, well, you know, with this particular contingent and effort, I mean, I can just see them. I'm like, you know, they got a, oh, there's a hair there. And it's like, oh, there was a glass. Was that Michelle or Barack who drank from that? Well, we better grab it anyway, you know. It's like, it's amazing. And the other issue that I wanted to, you know, to sort of pinpoint this is a 2010 WikiLeaks cable release that has Hillary Clinton directing embassy officials in foreign countries, you know, U.S. embassy officials, to surreptitiously grab the DNA of foreign diplomats and heads of state. Now, what is this DNA obsession really about? But it goes further than protecting or harvesting officials' DNA, because we have an entire couple of programs now within the U.S. that are creating DNA databases of U.S. citizens. One of these was codified in 2007, a piece of legislation called, I think, the Newborn DNA Screening Act, which basically legitimizes what's been going on since the 80s in many states, which is taking samples of newborn and storing samples of newborn DNA. At this point in time, it's unclear how large the registry is, but my sources tell me that they're getting at least 4 million samples a year attached to the newborn's name. Okay? So your DNA is being stored by the government. And not only are they collecting newborn, but they're also collecting offenders or arrestees. So if you are arrested in the United States, according to a recent Supreme Court decision, it is not an invasion of privacy for the police to, you know, take a sample of your DNA. So the FBI cops to, at this point, a database of about 13 million offender DNA. We don't even know how many of the newborn DNA is being stored. So what is this DNA obsession all about? You know, why are they so focused on this now? And there has been at least one effort, and this was back in South Africa in the 1970s and 80s, where Project Coast, which was the biochemical warfare unit of the apartheid South African government, was dedicated to creating a blacks-only bioweapon that would target people, you know, with dark skin, who were, of course, the pariahs of the South African state. So
AIDS. It's called AIDS. You're 50 times more likely to get infected with AIDS if you're black.
Well, this raises questions. I mean, how did this end up to be a blacks disease? But there's another aspect to this as well. Since the 70s and 80s, when Wouter Basson was dedicated to creating this blacks-only bioweapon, there has been soaring rates of hypertension and diabetes, which are considered silent killers, in people of color. And according to my sources, which include also a South African scientist who worked alongside Basson, what Basson was working on was finding something that would attach onto melanin. People with darker skin have more melanin. And lo and behold, since the time that Basson was working on this, we have seen skyrocketing rates, not only in black people, but the darker skinned people like Pacific Islanders, indigenous peoples like in Mexico. The rate of hypertension and diabetes here, where I'm living among the indigenous, is absolutely off the charts. In some communities, it's as high as 50% now. So my sources tell me that Bassan was successful. My sources tell me that this was leaked into processed food. So if you look at indigenous cultures, which are still eating natural food sources, not processed food, you don't find those rates of diabetes and hypertension at all. I've studied this rather extensively. So it looks like, you know, AIDS is an issue, but so is now what appears to be food-related hypertension and diabetes among people with darker skin. So, you know, these are really scary times that we're living in. I mean, you can be individually targeted. You can be targeted because of a group that you happen to share a DNA sort of strand with. And all of this falls under the mantle of plausible deniability. Oh, you know, these people, they're just black people. They just get diabetes. And, oh, a pandemic. Gee, well, we killed all this. We killed all the poor people. Well, they just didn't have good health anyway. You know, I mean, it all falls it keeps clean the persona and image of the government while enabling the government to do the most horrific sorts of things.
You know, it's you really can't underestimate the racism element. And you know what I find very interesting, Janet, is that people who come out and talk about race of any kind really get accused of being racist. But the government and the royal family don't get accused of being racist, even though they are clearly involved in promoting eugenics, which invariably winds up targeting the quote-unquote unclean races. Isn't that interesting?
Well, they've got a very good PR effort. It's called the media. The mm-hmm. media is basically acting as a public relations arm. That's where one of the problems is.
You know what the biggest killer of black people is in America?
What?
Planned Parenthood.
Oh, wow, yes.
80 million black babies aborted.
There's a lot of, you probably know, there's a lot of evidence linking the genesis of Planned Parenthood to the Eugenics Society.
Well, in fact, it was actually called the Eugenics Society, but after World War II, eugenics kind of got a bad name, you know, because of the fact that they just exterminated people and talked about racial purity, racial hygiene, that kind of thing, which is quackery science. And so the American Eugenics Society, which I think Bill Gates' father was one of the board members, and now Bill Gates is one of their prime contributors. It doesn't change much, does it? Changed their name to Planned Parenthood, because Planned Parenthood sounds a heck of a lot better than eugenics, we're going to exterminate you all, doesn't it? But they still practice eugenics and exterminate you all.
Well, the United States sounds a lot better than the National Socialist Party of Hitler's Germany, too. You know, you just change the name and you just, you know, continue on with the same sorts of activities.
Yeah, I mean, I moved to South America, and people didn't like the name Adolf Hitler, so I changed my name to Franz Ferdinand. Yes, it was very nice. Everybody treated me like an equal, and they were kind of suspicious about my very strange mustache, but I shaved it off, and now nobody cares. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm just making that up, of course, for the sake of argument, but yeah, happens all the time, doesn't it? Like Blackwater. You know what Blackwater is called now?
Academia or something like that? Academia, right?
No, it's called Z.
They changed it again?
And it's owned by, drumroll please, Monsanto. And guess who's got the ability now under the New Zealand Food Bill legislation, when it passes, of course, and it will, to send private mercenaries onto your home and property looking for illegally grown vegetables. Drum roll, please. Monsanto. It's not freaking difficult to work out as long as you've got the information. Isn't it? We've come to the end of the show, Janet. Do you have a quick wrap-up, if you want, 30 seconds, or have we said enough?
Well, just, you know, very quickly, my website is janetphelan.com. Look for my upcoming book soon, Exile. And thank you, Vinny. It's been a real pleasure.
Likewise. And thank you very much for giving us some of your valuable time. And I'm very glad that we had those calls before the show started, so we got those technical issues sorted out, because if, otherwise it would have just been me ranting about how much I hate cops today, which I think, you know, there was a little section in there where I couldn't contain myself, but yeah, it's all good. Thank you, Janet. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. By the way, if you appreciate this show and the coverage that we give to people like Janet, who blow the whistle on very, very scary topics, please donate or subscribe for $5 a month at the Vinny Eastwood Show. .com. We'll see you again sometime.